No better person to lead off than the fine assemblyman representing District Number 1 right here on Long Island. His name, of course, is Fred Thiel, and we welcome him always. Sir, very good morning. Sir, how are you?
Good. We're ready for another hot day. It's been a very, very hot summer here.
It really has. You know, you couple that with the lack of electricity for a lot of folks. That is tough times. Tough times. I remember way back in time, we've had plenty of instances of power outages in my days living in Queens. I'll tell you this much. Never fun, especially in the summertime. Plenty of outrage. I know you're on this thing. Listen, we had the president of PSEG Long Island on Friday. He's trying to develop some strategies here. It's kind of on-the-job training for many, unfortunately, as far as the preparations of it all. Give me the Fred Thiel take on things that have transpired since last Tuesday.
Well, it comes under the heading of I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. We've been here before. With LIPA, we started out with Keyspan, which did a pretty good job, and then it was National Grid, and now it's PSE&G, and LIPA, we rebranded because, after Sandy, LIPA was in the toilet, so let's bring in PSE&G. But the story is the same, and that is, back after Sandy, there was the LIPA Reform Act that was adopted in 2013, and, I voted against it. I voted against it because, there was a lack of oversight over PSE&G, a lack of transparency, and a lack of accountability. I mean, LIPA has become a shell, and PSE&G has been allowed to do whatever they wanted to do. And then in that interim from 2013 to today, we have seen the highest rate increase ever in the history of LIPA. The debt is higher than ever. For LIPA, but we were told it was all for a good cause, that we were paying more in rates and we had to increase the debt because we were going to harden our system and we're going to improve communications and everything was going to be great. But the fact of the matter is that it was a total failure. Isaias is not Sandy. It's not the 1938 hurricane. It's not even Gloria or Bob from 85 and 91. This was a good storm, but it was a tropical storm. It was not a big storm. It was for a few hours. And chaos reigned. Communications broke down in the first hour. We've been told, first everything would be back online by Friday. It's not. Everything would be back online by Saturday. Sunday at the latest, and now, today's Tuesday, tomorrow's Wednesday, and there's still over 50,000 people without power. So, you can talk about taking away PSE&G's license and all of those things, but, the system is not one that requires, that provides for accountability. When LIPA was originally started, it was intended that there be an elected board of trustees. That would be accountable to the people. Instead, LIPA has had a board that's accountable to politicians in Albany, to the governor, to the speaker, to the majority leader in the Senate. Those are the people that appoint the LIPA board. None of them are accountable to people on Long Island. And we have our electricity provided by a company that's really a New Jersey company. So this is the result of all of that. And, at this stage of the game, all you want to do I feel like it's 2020 has been a strange year, but I spent March and April trying to help people get through the unemployment process and be able to get their checks, and now we're trying to help people get their electricity back on, that's the main goal right now. But there's going to be a whole slew of investigations. The attorney general's doing one. The legislature's doing one. But we need to have an electric power company that's accountable directly to people on Long Island and not to a New Jersey company or to politicians in Albany.
To me, it's about a philosophy almost. It's almost like you can bring back Miller Huggins to a lousy baseball team, but it's not going to change anything if the philosophies are still the same within the organization. And I correlate that to what happens with this utility They took over after Sandy just a year and a half later. You think they would have put things in place. They had 6 years or so, give or take, to get it right. They have not, obviously. And after listening to Dan Eichhorn on Friday, you know, I came away from that. You know, listen, how about burying the lines? At this point in time, we still have that 19th century mentality here. And we got to change. When I say the philosophies, we have to change the way operations are in place. I don't want to hear about costs or anything. They spent $700+ million on outage maps and computers and meter reading changes. And still, we are failing here. And it's a philosophy. You can get rid of Eichhorn. You can get rid of Tom Falcone, okay, from LIPA. But I got to tell you, it's still not going to change no matter who you bring in. Because unless we change our thinking, the philosophy, how we're going to go about making it better, we're going to have the same old stuff for the next storm. That's what it comes down to, Fred.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, you can, as you say, you can substitute one company for another. You can substitute one individual for another to be the president or the CEO. But, you know, the bottom line is, first of all, your utility company has to be accountable to its customers, not to politicians in Albany or not to a New Jersey company. That's how you change the philosophy, because in that case, then they are responding to what the public, you know, what the public demands and what the public wants. So it's the governing structure that needs to change first. And you're absolutely right as far as underground utility lines. And you and I, we've been on the phone many times when we were battling with them to bury transmission lines, whether it was in Eastport or East Hampton in my district. It happened in Nassau County and other parts where, you know, they simply wouldn't bury the line. The short-term, cost benefit was not to bury the lines, even though there are longer-term benefits, you know, such as when these storms happen, you know, to bury lines where you have the opportunity. And again, it's because they're looking at their short-term bottom line for a New Jersey company and not as to what's best for the people of Long Island. And again, we've seen it, you know, time after time after time. And if you have to change the underlying thinking and the governing structure and who is LIPA and who is our utility company going to be accountable to. The people who live here or Albany or New Jersey?
Well, let me say this about Albany, and I'll say this, and we'll move on to a couple other things. You know, listen, I can't give the governor a pass on this either. He's the manager. He manages the state. He manages the utilities, as what happened to National Grid a couple of years ago, okay, regarding the moratorium on gas. Came down hard on it, and he had a good result. I look at this, you know, listen, if you're going to tell me they're doing a lousy job, as he put it, use that word, regarding Con Edison and regarding PSEG, you have to take some accountability, I would think. No, I think he has to, Fred.
Listen, LIPA is controlled by the governor's office, and the PSEG, which, you know, oversees and regulates Con Edison, those are, you know, gubernatorial appointments also. So, that's the truth. I mean, that's the way it is. And as I said, it's just been, one problem after another. And, I remember a few years back and, I was, again, complaining about them not burying the lines in Eastport and talking about how rates had increased and debt had increased and all of those things. And I was told that, they're doing a pretty good job. You know, the lights are on. And I said the lights are on, but they've never, they had never really been challenged. I mean, they hadn't had their Gloria or their Sandy. And, and this storm wasn't even a fraction of what Gloria was in 1985 or what Sandy was in 2012. It was a tropical storm that lasted a couple of hours. And, again, the communications broke down in the first hour. And, you know, communication is important here. I mean, people want to be able to contact the utility company. You know, they know if there's a storm that power may go out, but they want to be able to talk to their utility company, number one. And they want an honest appraisal as to when the power is going to come back on. When, you know, when you tell them Friday and it's the following Tuesday and their power is still out, you know, that's what frustrates and upsets people in particular. And, you know, here we are. It's going to be a week. And, you know, we're still not out of this yet.
You know, Fred, I'll say this last point on my end. They are the first folks to call you regarding your bill when it's late, right? You have later in the bill, they'll call you. If they're later in the bill, they'll want to say, you know what, let's set up a budget for you. Or if you want to be on budget balance billing, you have to supply them everything. They basically will, you know what to you. In order to decipher if you are a candidate for balanced budget. And I say this because they scrutinize you. They scrutinize you when you go down to the office. They scrutinize you on the phone regarding a late bill. But my goodness, they can't answer the call when you don't have the electric. They can't even call you back. What a disgrace. Fred Thiel, my final word on that. Give me a comment.
And you couldn't get and online also. I mean, you know, that was there was no way to reach them, not by computer, not by telephone. And, again, my last word on this is, you know, when LIPA was formed 35 years ago, the idea was to have an elected board of trustees that would be accountable to the people of Long Island. That was the right idea then. Nobody's ever wanted to go ahead with it in Albany. I think an elected board with LIPA would be a good way to start to fix this.
No question. I'm getting nauseous over this subject without question. Fred Thiel, never to get nauseous over. Let's move on to the schools, the reopening. Governor making the announcement shortly before 11 o'clock on Friday morning. I thought it was the right announcement. I think I've said all along, you can geo-target region by region, numbers low. You can do so safely. I like the steps. I like the plans, although I want to see more Long Island districts. There's 28 of them still that have not submitted plans for reopening. Your assessment, sir, as we get ready to get into September, a couple of weeks, we're not far. For the school season, are you in favor of reopening the doors in your neck of the woods?
Yes, and I think the governor did make the right decision. You know, the percentage of positive tests each day has been below 1% statewide. It's been around 1% on Long Island. The governor set the mark at 5%. We're way below that. The numbers have been good, and I think that allows for the reopening of schools. I think that we need to provide our school districts on the state level. We need to provide them with as much support and the funding that they're going to need to implement the schools. I think that's our responsibility. I think the specifics of their reopening plan, you know, I've got 20 school districts in the first assembly district. Every school district has a little bit different situation. So, you know, each school district should have their own plan. From talking to the local districts, I think most of them believe that, especially with younger children, you know, in the elementary schools, there really needs to be the focus on in-person learning there. And I think that's what most of the districts are doing. With regard to the older kids, you know, there may be a little bit more of a hybrid as far as how they're going to do that. This is going to be a new experience, and, one of our school superintendents, Lars Clemenson from Hampton Bay, said it right, and that is, you know, the plans that are being put together now and that the state will be approving, those aren't the plans for 2020, 2021. Those are the plans for September 8th. I think school districts will need to be agile. They'll need to be to address the changes in circumstances as they come up during the year, what to do if they do get a positive test or if there's a spike. School districts have to have alternatives and be able to have plans for contingencies. But I think, you know, going into September, opening the schools is the right thing to do. The more in-person learning the better. I think, you know, you don't need to be a PhD in education to know that virtual learning has its issues, and the more in-person learning, the better. And I think that's the direction that every school district is headed in. The governor has given until Friday for the remaining school districts to get in their plans. They need to do it. And, I think for the most of the month of August, as the governor has recommended, there needs to be lots of communications with parents and with teachers and staff. There needs to be confidence in these plans, and they need to be involved in it. Kind of that old Yogi Berra line where he used to say, well, you know, if people don't want to come to the ballpark, nobody's going to stop them. And that's kind of what school is going to be like. And you can have the best plan, but, you know, your parents and your staff and your teachers have to have confidence in it, because they're the ones that ultimately, especially parents, ultimately are going to make the decisions about sending their kids to school. And, you know, it's important for school districts to communicate all the details of their plans, input whatever comments they get from parents, and listen. I think listening is a big part of this. And I think if that happens, schools can open. And, again, there's going to be a need for adjustments during the year. You know, things that you think are going to work aren't going to be perfect, and you're going to have to adjust. But schools need to reopen. I think, you know, the benefit of getting, flattening the curve and getting the numbers down below 1% is having the opportunity, you know, to reopen the schools.
My only thing is we need to ramp the testing up. You know me about the rapid testing. We have to get that. Yep. That's a game changer. You got to get the rapid testing. We can't go with what has been going on that we see. Fred, I got a couple of minutes, 2 minutes left. I'll ask you this. We know the counties are in dire need of funds, okay? Suffolk's going through hell right now, $1.5 billion deficit through 2022. Nassau is $750 million, give or take. How do you do it without the help from the federal government? Do you think we're going to get aid here? The state is bankrupt. Without money, I don't know how they're going to function for the next couple of years, and these counties are in desperate trouble right now, as dire as I've seen it. How does this end? Does it end well? Do we get money?
Well, that's really the big question, isn't it? I mean, you know, the state has a shortfall in revenue. And you've seen some of the reports. You know, gross domestic product in the second quarter was down 32%. State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli showed that sales tax revenues for local governments, which is counties and cities, down 27% in the second quarter. Just for this fiscal year, the state of New York projects a shortfall of about $15 billion. You've outlined what the counties are going through. It's only the federal government that really can help with this. I mean, the state, we don't have a printing press in the basement. We have to balance our budgets every year. The counties are in the same position. The federal government, the Congress, has to do another bill, and it has to include aid to state and local government. And we mentioned school districts before, and they're going to need that help also. So, you know, the answer to your question is, I don't know the answer, and I don't know what the Congress is going to do. I mean, you know, they've blown through a couple of deadlines already. I'm seeing this morning that, you know, the House of Representatives isn't supposed to come back until September. That's just not acceptable. They need to be in Washington doing the job, and part of the plan has to be aid to state and local government. Otherwise, it's going to be chaotic. I mean, there's going to be massive layoffs, and it's not just, you know, government providing services. It's really going to short circuit any economic recovery. So that aid to state and local governments is critical. The Congress needs to act. They need to get back into Washington. People aren't going to accept the kind of partisan bickering that's going on there now with regard to aid. And, you know, not just aid to state and local governments, but unemployment insurance, continuation of that. But these are things that need to be addressed, and they need to be addressed immediately.
a great point. You know, in the old days when you had negotiations, whatever, in life, sports, whatever, they'd work around the clock. They wouldn't go to bed. They wouldn't come out of a room, an office in Manhattan, until they emerged with an agreement. What in the heck are we reading about with recess here and days off there, and we'll come back when we get close? No. My goodness. It's hard to believe what goes on Capitol Hill these days. Always a pleasure. Love talking with you. Love getting your take on things. You stay well, and we'll talk soon,
thanks,
sir.
Hey, thanks, Jay. Be safe, and we'll talk again real soon.